Welcome back to Be More Super, the podcast, where we explore the world of entertainment with celebrity interviews from your favorite movies and TV shows. So grab your popcorn and let's get to know these stars better and what really makes them super. We are brought to you by PropStore.com, where you can find your very own piece of entertainment memorabilia from screen-used props to costumes. Now, here's your host, Brian Garner.
So on this week's episode of Be More Super, the podcast, we've got a great guest. This actress is not only on our screens in so many things, but she also works behind the camera as well with her talents. It's Susan Gallagher. Susan, welcome to the show, my love.
Hi, thank you. Thank you for having me. It's good to be here.
Oh, do you know what? I'm so excited because literally you are probably one of the busiest actors out there at the moment. December is your month at the moment because you've got so many things coming out. But obviously our viewers will recognize you as Lynn from Cobra Kai, and then obviously Loki and so many other great shows and films. But we're here to talk about Merry Good Enough, which is a new Christmas movie, and to touch on also Fast Charlie, which is a film coming out very, very soon. But what I wanted to do was find out a bit more about you, Susan, if that's okay. So, I mean, what fired you up to take on acting, one of the most competitive industries that anyone can choose? Why not a 9-to-5 job? Why acting?
I've done the 9-to-5 job, and you know, I've been down all of those different roads and done a lot of different things. But my mother was in the entertainment industry before she started having kids. She's a jazz musician and singer, and I think I grew up with a little bit of a bug for the business. There were a lot of entertainers that were in our home, and there was a lot of showbiz talk. And so, and she was very creative. My dad was a very creative guy, and my sister Barbara, she got her master's from Juilliard in classical composition, so she's quite talented. She's like the talented one in the family. And my oldest sister and my brother played the drums, and we were just, it was a creative upbringing, you know, and a lot of craziness, but there was a lot of creativity, and that was encouraged. And I think that I always wanted to be an actress, but I never had the courage to fail, to even try, until I got a little bit older. And so when I had done some modeling, you know, in my teens, but I grew up in Charlotte, North Carolina, Gastonia, North Carolina. So there wasn't a whole lot of anything going on there in the entertainment industry. But when I married and started having kids and moved to Florida, back in the day, Florida had a lot of commercials, a few television shows, and a lot of print work. And my husband encouraged me to get some headshots and to start taking some classes. And there were some local agents in my area and some classes. So that's what I did. And the doors just started opening up, and I thought, okay, maybe I can do this. Cause my sister, the composer, she was so talented, Brian, that I think it intimidated me a little bit from the arts, because she was like this, you know, this child Beethoven kind of person. And, so, you know, it was a little bit overwhelming to have a sibling that was so talented. But, you know, I got good feedback. I started having a little bit of confidence. And then I love acting so much. And I just continued to study. And I would, you know, as my kids got older, we would go to L.A. every pilot season, and I would continue to study and work and grow. And then, I did it part-time for years while I raised my children, and I don't regret that, not one bit. Mm. So I have been playing catch up the last several years and really hustling and learning. And I keep an apartment in New York and study and get really serious about it. And that's kind of my goal, Brian, is just to try to become better at it project, with each year.
I mean, you say hustling, and viewers out there, you know, they don't often realize how difficult it is to actually succeed in this business because, you know, it's not a case of parts are just being thrown at these actors and actresses like yourself. You've actually got to go and audition and work really hard. So starting out when you decided to take on this journey, how hard was it? And what was the hardest things you had to overcome to be where you are now?
The hardest thing is the location where, you know, where I find myself. I'm in the Southeast. I'm in a regional market. Yes, I would. We would go to LA for pilot season every single year. And we had a great time. It was wonderful for my family. It was, you know, my kids went to the Studio Academy at Oakwood Apartments, and I would book a few jobs. They would book a few jobs. And my husband was wonderful to support us. And he would come and he would commute every 2 weeks. And, but, you know, I never booked anything that was a game changer, Brian, that would keep us there. And for me to say to my husband, okay, I have booked a series regular, you know, so we would always come back home, and I was always trying to break out of the regional market. And what I've had to do, and then I was put in a very small box, you know, oh, she's this type of lady or woman or whatever, so she can play these roles and that's it. And I knew I wanted to be a more of a character actress. So I would start submitting myself on Actors Access and backstage.com. And I would look and see, number one, if the role spoke to me, if it's something that I need on my demo reel that can, my agent can market me, or I can market myself. Number two, you know, who is the director? Who's the writer? Who's the producer? Who's behind it? Is it someone that has had some success maybe with a previous project that's gotten into a great Oscar qualifying film festival, right? Mm-hmm. So I would hustle and I would submit. I would try to get those roles. A lot of times I would have to work as a local hire because most of the actors in a regional market work as a local hire. And our region would be Florida, Georgia, Tennessee, New Orleans, Louisiana, you know, Mississippi, that all of the Southeast is a regional market. So I would have to pay my own way. But, you know, I've worked with Holly Hunter. I've worked with Kyle Chandler. I've worked with, you know, I was on NCIS New Orleans, my first network guest star role. So it's paid off for me in that way. But most of our actors are not willing to do that, or some can't because of the financial situation. But even people who can, you know, scrape up the money to do it, you know, they're just happy doing, you know, what they get, booking a commercial every now and then, or doing a short film every now and again. And that's fine if that's what they want to do. But that's just not what I wanted to do. I was driven, and I'm still very driven.
I mean, your character.
But the rejection.
Yeah.
But let me just finish this. Besides being in, you know, a secondary market, I mean, the hardest thing, no matter where you are, is the rejection, because there is a lot of rejection. Like you were saying, I mean, it's a very competitive field, and you have to have the skin of a rhino.
I mean,
you have to be so tough.
When you talk about rejection, what motivates you? Because, you know, again, being a performer, you are constantly sort of ridiculed for either your performance on screen or during the audition process. So how do you keep motivated and positive and moving forwards when you get rejections?
You have to have a support system around you. At least I have. And I can remember years and years ago, when the kids were young, and I would work really hard, get an audition. I'd work really hard, you know, analyzing the script and developing a backstory and all of the things that we're taught to do, and feel like I delivered, you know, the best audition ever, and then not get it, not get any feedback, you know, that's it. And I would, you know, feel sorry for myself, and I would get down for a little bit. And then I would start to threaten to quit. And after a while, and then, you know, okay, I'm done with this. And then you get another audition and you're like, well, let me just see what it is. And then it's this great character who's fun, or, you know, something, you know, it just, you know, it just juices you up and gets you all excited and that adrenaline going. And so after a while, my husband and my kids were like, okay, no more whining, no more complaining when you don't get the part, and don't ever say you're going to quit because you're not going to. So, you know, I've had people around me, and I've got some wonderful friends who have been on this ride with me from the very beginning, and they would never let me quit. They're like, there's no way we're letting you quit. You're meant to do this. You can do this. And, you know, they're invested as much as I am and upset when I don't get things, but sometimes more than me, because I understand it, because I'm also a producer and I realize it is not personal. But, you know, a lot of my friends who aren't in the business are like, why didn't they book you? So you have to take it all with a grain of salt, and you have to have a life. Acting is a big part of my life and it's my passion, but I have a life. So, I mean, that balances it out a little bit, I think.
I mean, auditions, you mentioned auditions, and auditions are definitely a big part of an actor's process. I mean, love them or hate them, they've got to exist. So, honestly, do you enjoy auditioning, or would you wish not to?
I I'm getting to the point where I'm starting to receive direct bookings, which are so nice, because I have auditioned for years and I did not like the auditioning process for a long time. It's very time consuming. I mean, and every time you go on a vacation with your family, you always get an audition. It never fails. Sometimes you'll get a job. So you have to expect that too. But for a long time, I just, you know, it's work. It's a lot of work, and you're not getting paid a dime to do it. But, you know, since I've had more freedom when, you know, my youngest went to college and I really started focusing on this full time, I started to enjoy the auditioning process more, because it's an opportunity to act. It's an opportunity to work. I mean, it's better, and I think more beneficial than, 10 acting classes, because you're actually doing it. And, you know, it's not so much whether I get the job. It's like, okay, let me prepare. Let me get into this role and present what I do. Mm-hmm. And either I'm who they have in mind, or either there's something that I do that maybe sparks their interest and I book it, or it's their loss.
I mean, there's an actor called James Morrison that actually I had on the show a while back, and he's got a documentary about the audition process, because it's an art in itself to audition. I mean, obviously, right, you've got in person and then self tape, and obviously since the pandemic, it's gone more towards self tape. Do you prefer self tape compared to in person?
Well, the reason that I would say yes, I do, is because I'm not having to schlep up and down the highway, you know. Mm. And that's expensive. It's wear and tear on your vehicle, or it's a flight. So that, you know, it saved a lot of money and a lot of time and a lot of energy. But I do miss having the director in the room to be able to give a note or two, because And to feel the energy in the room. I missed that a little bit, but no, I would rather self-tape, just for the convenience of it, actually.
And also, I wanted to ask, because it always intrigues me, when you started your career and where you are now, did you have a plan in place in what you wanted to achieve within the industry? And has that changed over the years?
I think in the beginning, I needed the creative outlet, and I knew that, that I really was attracted to having that creative outlet in my life. And I also knew that as my children got older, that I needed to have something, because I adored motherhood and I could have been obsessed with those kids forever, but I needed to have something for myself and have some independence and, And I always knew in the back of my mind that once my youngest did go off to college, that I was going to just, you know, super focus, just hyper focus on my career and see where the road takes me and take risks and be bold and be open. And I think as I've gotten older, that has been probably the best thing for me, is that I've been able to be more open to new relationships, to new jobs, new opportunities, and not allow fear, because you know that this can be a head psych, and you can lose that confidence so easily when you have so much rejection, and maybe you did a great job and maybe they actually loved it, but you just weren't the right look, or you know, something else came into play, but you don't know that. You don't usually get a lot of feedback because agents are busy and directors and casting directors are very busy. So they can't go back and say, oh, okay, well, you know, this one booked the role, but these five over here, they loved. But like agents have said over the years, if you're receiving a callback, then, you know, you're on the short list and you're valued. So as long as you're receiving a callback, then you're doing something right.
I mean, I admire anyone that goes through the process that you do, because, you know, I used to act when I was younger. And the thing is, for me, is when you go to casting calls and you line up and they just go down the line and they just pick out people that fit a certain height, size, look, even before you start actually opening your mouth and doing your audition piece, your sides or your monologue or whatever. So it was frustrating as hell. So that's why, you know, I just thought to myself, I want to get out of it before it affects me mentally, because I'm sure there are
actors
out there.
You're not crazy enough. You're not crazy enough.
definitely. Let's talk about Merry Good Enough. I've got a poster here, which is your latest movie that's coming out. Well, not your latest one. We're going to speak about that in a moment. But this is coming out on the 19th of December. Yeah. So people watching this interview, you'll be able to watch it straight away on digital platforms. And everyone loves a Christmas movie, I've got to say. I mean, if you could describe who you play and a bit about the movie itself.
Merry Good Enough is a feature film, an indie film, that it's about a real family. It's a neurotic family that has different issues. We have, I play the mom, somewhat neurotic mom, and Rae Levine Spielberg plays my daughter. She's the star of the movie and she's absolutely fantastic. Comfort Clinton, who is in this poster with Rae, she's from Billions, if you're familiar with that show. She plays one of my daughters. And then Joel Murray from Mad Men plays my ex-husband. And Sawyer Spielberg, Steven's son, is actually Ray's husband in real life and her love interest in the movie. So it was a wonderful experience. And everyone wanted to be there. They love the script. The writing is fantastic of Caroline Keene. Dan Kennedy is a co-director. And he's crazy talented, and I think his short premiered at Tribeca last year. So these are really talented young people, and I just fell in love with the writing because it's real. It's about mother daughter dynamics and some of the dysfunction that happens. But at the end of the day, you love each other, and I love Hallmark Christmas movies, like a lot of people, in Lifetime. As a matter of fact, I've got a Lifetime Christmas movie called The Christmas Contract that is airing right now. So, but this one really, I don't know, it just pulled me in because it's about a real family that has real issues, and it's funny, it's heartfelt, it's heartbreaking at times. And I like the saying, if you love Christmas movies, this film is for you. If you love Christmas, this movie is for you. If you hate Christmas, this movie is for you. So it is for everybody, I think, to be enjoyed. And Caroline Keene, the brilliant writer, wanted it to be sort of like a reverse Home Alone with Macaulay Culkin, but it's instead of the kid being home alone, you know, the mom disappears, and you know, so they're you know, trying to figure out what happened to me, and I think people are going to love it.
I mean, I'm going to link the trailer in the description for this video because I've seen the trailer.
Oh, good.
And it looks amazing. It looks so good. And the thing about indie movies good. That I like, indie movies, yeah. I just think have got a lot more heart, a lot more, I don't know, they concentrate more on the story and the characters. And don't get me wrong, these big budget movies are fantastic, but the indie movies for me and Hallmark, who doesn't like a Hallmark movie? I'm a sucker for Hallmark movies. Honestly.
Because really they always have a happy ending, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
I know. Yeah.
I mean, obviously your character in this, I mean, with Christmas traditions, did you bring anything? I mean, the character that you play without giving anything away, obviously you're playing a mom. Is there anything that you brought personally into the character, into this movie? Any traditions, any Christmas feelings?
I've always loved Christmas, but growing up, I came from a very dysfunctional family. So we had a lot of issues during the holidays, and, you know, there's alcohol involved and you're going to have, you know, fights and this and that. But then we also had happy times and, you know, we'd get up on Christmas morning and, open presents and, you know, have family time. So even though there is a lot of dysfunction in this family in Mary Good Enough, like my own family growing up, there is also a lot of love and a lot of humor. And I am the kind of person, and I come from a long line of hilarious people, and I'm the kind of person that has survived a lot in my own life through humor, through my faith, through my humor and just, you know, toughness. But there is humor in this movie. And I think that is something that I brought from my own life, my own childhood, my own family to this role.
I mean, is there a perfect, like a special scene for you that you filmed, any special moment from this that we should be looking out for?
I don't want to say, because Brian, I don't want to give anything away. You just have to wait and see. But she's she's a very loving, this woman loves her children. You know, she wants to take their pictures all the time. And, you know, she's just trying really hard to make it work when they come home for this holiday. And, you know, it doesn't always work.
But from the look of it, it does sort of resemble probably the majority of people's holidays, because, you know, I suppose the normal Hallmark movies make, you know, Christmas look this, you know, this fantasy sort of snow everywhere and it's beautiful and nothing ever goes wrong. But this actually reminds me of past holiday experiences. So I'm really looking forward to watching it. But what message or feeling do you think this movie will bring to viewers? I mean, you know, what are they going to leave with watching this movie?
I think with hope and acceptance of, you know, our own humanness and mistakes, and to, you know, forgive ourselves, to forgive our families. I think a feeling of hope and forgiveness, and just to lighten up a little bit and try to be grateful for the time that we're on this earth, really. And be grateful for the family members that we do have that we love, because life is short.
Life is short, and we don't have any reruns, so we've got to make the most of it. And someone said to me the other day that each day you've got to remember this is your very first day having your day, if you know what I mean. You wake up and this is your first day, so you've got to make the most of it and put your stamp on on that day. So this gets released on the 19th of December on all digital platforms. Just out of curiosity, have you got a favorite Christmas movie yourself?
Well, I'd probably get in trouble if I didn't say The Christmas Contract, because it is airing right now on Lifetime. So I'm going to... But I always loved Charlie Brown Christmas with the little Christmas tree, and I would have to say, I mean, Love Actually is great. I mean, there's a lot of fabulous Christmas movies, but I love Charlie Brown.
Do you know what? Every year I always say to myself, I'm going to watch It's a Wonderful Life. And every year I start watching
it, and then
I get interrupted by my girls, and I'm like, no. So this year I've decided I'm going to watch it when my girls are in school. Then I can get peace and quiet and I can watch it for myself. But then not only have you got that movie coming out on the 19th, but you've got also Fast Charlie with my man crush, which is Pierce Brosnan. I mean, you couldn't get better than starring in a movie with James Bond himself. Can you tell us a bit about the movie and who you play, and what was it like? Did you share any scenes with Pierce?
Yeah, and I'm not starring in it. I'm in a couple of scenes, but I'm very grateful for those scenes. And I actually attended a screening this past week in Los Angeles, at UTA, and was able to be with some of the cast members. Pierce was not there. It was a critic's review, but he's just the loveliest man. He is as lovely as you can imagine. He is so professional. He is a very devoted family man, and he's a gentleman. I mean, he's so lovely, Brian. He just truly is. And I do have a big scene. I have a pretty intense scene with him, and I'm just so grateful for that experience. And I'm also very grateful to be part of that, because it's the last film that the late, great James Caan did. Mm. And there's one of my scenes, my first scene, is we're at a birthday party, and we're celebrating his character, whose name is Stan. And it's a Southern mobster kind of movie. So it's sort of, his goodbye to the Godfather and all of that in this movie. So it was very, very special. And we're all singing happy birthday to him. And it was just one of those incredible experiences that I think I'll remember the rest of my life, because he died not long after that. And even though he was very feeble and in a wheelchair, had a wonderful attendant with him, when they would call action, he was just seamless. You didn't know if he was acting or just having a conversation or cutting up. And he still had that wit and charm, and wow, I was just like, this is so, so special. I just really felt honored and blessed to be part of that. And then Philip Noyce, the Australian director, to be in his movie, it was like he was holding a master class for all of us Southeastern cast and crew, because he's so good and he's so knowledgeable and he's a natural born teacher. And we were just soaking it up like sponges, listening and hanging on to every word, because he would explain why things were done the way they were done. And Philip Noyce, I am a huge fan, not only of Pierce Brosnan, but of director Philip Noyce. And I'm just so grateful to be in his movie. Really.
And James will be forever remembered on screen, which I think is wonderful about the acting world.
Yes, because he did what he loved up until the very end.
Yeah.
I mean, that's quite inspirational. Yeah.
I wanted to ask, what did Pierce smell like? Did he smell nice? I bet he did. He looks like he smells nice.
There's everything about him is wonderful. And I think Philip was teasing him about his long, slim legs or something, because he's got on this pair of shorts and I think these shoes and these socks. And somebody was just giving him a hard time. I don't remember if it was Philip or the DP or somebody. And he said, Pierce said in his lovely accent, he said, well, these legs have gotten me around for a few years, and I really like these legs. So, you know, he took it in with a sense of humor and had a lovely comeback, you know. He's remarkable. He's the perfect movie star because he doesn't take himself too seriously, but he's brilliant. He's a brilliant actor and he's great at being a movie star. And I mean, he's just lovely. He speaks to people, you know, to the background players. He's no different to them. And, you know, he was great to be around.
It would be great if he could bring back Remington Steele, because that was
I love that show.
It's a great show. That and Moonlighting with Bruce Willis, I thought were like just my they were my favorite shows when I was younger.
But no, that's Sybil Shepherd.
They don't make TV like that anymore in that way, and I don't know if that's because of nostalgia, because of you know, the way life was back then. Because I've always said now it's very difficult for content to come to light because there's so much, you know, content out there. There's so many streaming platforms.
Right.
So for these gems to come out, because there's so many, you know, undiscovered movies and TV shows that need more credit than they get. So this is why I like doing this show, because I discover a lot of shows that I've never seen and films I've never seen as well, to enlighten me.
And but you know, Remington Steele, if I'm not mistaken, excuse me for interrupting, but it's one of his projects was he had a little bit of a conflict with the 007 with James Bond. Mm-hmm. So thankful that they were able to, you know, work out whatever his schedule conflicts were, because I loved him as James Bond.
Yeah, because he was going to go for The Living Daylights, but the show got, I think, resold for Remington Steele. And because he was still under contract, he was hoping that it wasn't going to get sold so he could get the part of James Bond. But obviously it went to Timothy Dalton instead. But I think it was perfect timing, because if he was in Living Daylights, I don't think GoldenEye would have ever been made the way it was.
I agree.
So I think that things happen for a reason. And as one door closes, another one opens. So what's next for you, Susan? You know, is it just to put your feet up and enjoy all your hard work for everything that's coming out in December? Is it a relaxed time?
I've got a little bit of momentum, Brian, and I'm trying my hard to keep it going. So I cannot rest right now. I've got to really hustle and push hard. You know, I started my own production company, Her Little Red Productions, back in 2014, because I was tired of waiting for my agent to call. And I wanted to feel like I had a little bit more control over my future and my career, and just to keep creating, right? So I've been collaborating with a producing partner of mine, Cullen Douglas, and we're working on something really special. We've got a great cast already on board, and it's very exciting. And we hope to start filming early 2024. So I invite you and appreciate you and your listeners following my journey and supporting us. And I've got another film that we're hoping to start in the new year. I play a woman with dementia, and it's based on a true story of this Southern family in Georgia, and the other family members are trying to not only help their sister, but protect her from certain danger and dangerous situations. And so I'm just honored to be part of that project. And I had done a pickleball proof of concept last year, and one of the producers of the pickleball series is he's producing another film. So he cast me in that, and we're shooting that in February. And then I had booked two different jobs before the strike, and we're supposed to shoot in Florida, where I am right now. And I'm just hoping and keeping my fingers crossed that they're going to pick that back up, and we're going to be doing that this year. And of course, Cobra Kai is starting back up. And we all hope and pray that the big three, John Hurwitz, Josh Heald, and Hayden Schlossberg, will will bring Lynn, homeless Lynn, back. And you're like, at the beginning when you opened the intro, you said that people would recognize me as Lynn. Well, they wouldn't, because I play the homeless bum. So my teeth are rotten. I look nothing like I do right now. But it's been a blast and quite a thrill to be part of something that is so special in the Karate Kid universe. And I'm grateful, so thankful to the big three for casting me as Lynn. So, and Loki, you know, that was just such a great experience too. I mean, to be part of Marvel, the Marvel universe is, doesn't get too much better than that, but, I've just got to keep it going and got to stay focused moving forward and not let negativity and fear and any of those things hold me back. Just like with all of you, you know, we have to stay positive and be around positive people.
Exactly. Mood hoovers, we don't want to know, as I call I call them. I just want to be around happy people because it brings you up as well. But in the 19th of December, Mary Goodenough, check it out. I'll have all the links at the bottom. I'll have all your socials at the bottom of the video as well. For everyone to follow your journey and your future projects. But Susan, you've been a great guest. Thank you so much for coming on. And I look forward to you chatting to you in the future for your many other projects.
Absolutely, Brian. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to Be More Super, the podcast. This podcast has been brought to you by PropStore.com. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to help support the podcast, please subscribe and leave a rating and review. To stay up to date with Be More Super and get all the behind-the-scenes content, you can follow us on Instagram at Be More Super the Podcast and on Twitter at Be More Super. Keep safe and stay super.